Welcome to the Weekly Juice Podcast, where we discuss all things real estate, personal finance, investing, and entrepreneurship. Whether this is your first time here or you're an avid listener, we're thrilled to have you a part of our community. Our goal is to share successful stories of entrepreneurs and investors in the hopes that these stories inspire you along your journey towards financial freedom. We discuss successes, failures, systems, motivations, experiences, and key lessons learned over time. After each episode, you should feel motivated, empowered, and prepared to take action in your own life. Make sure to tune in every Wednesday to get your weekly juice. You can also find us on Instagram at Weekly Juice Pod, where we post daily content, personal finance tips, and document our own journey towards financial freedom. Welcome back to the Weekly Juice. As always, it's your boys, Ryan and Corey, here with another episode for you. Today, we interviewed special guest Brian Davila. He is a house flipper and an Airbnb super host, aka a short-term rental investor. And he is currently in the process of building up an Airbnb portfolio of 20 properties. He's currently at number 8, but he uses his house flipping business, basically his like 9-to-5 job, if you will, is his house flipping business, to pump money into his Airbnb portfolio. And he hopes to, you know, essentially retire, I guess, one day with 20 properties producing about $500K in cash flow.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so he has a 7-figure flipping business, right? 7-figure flipping business. And not only that, he has 8 properties, 8 Airbnbs that generate him $300,000 a year net. So 8 properties, $300,000 a year. I mean, we could live off that so easily. So like we kind of confirmed that short-term rentals is the next phase for us. He's mentioned he wants to get to 20, but a unique part of his story is that he mentioned to us, that he was actually a drug addict from the ages of 15 to 25. He's 31 now. So he's done all of this kind of when he turned 25, 26. In 5 to 6 years, he's built a 7-figure flipping business. I'll say it again. And then he owns 8 short-term rentals that generates him $300,000 a year in cash flow, trying to get to 500,000 to kind of then reevaluate.
To throw another wrinkle in here, he has a coaching business. Yep. Him and Ryan Pineda, as well as a few others, they own Future Flipper, which is a real estate flipping, wholesaling and Airbnb coaching platform. So he's just doing a lot, and very accomplished for age 31, and dug himself out of a pretty deep hole.
Yeah, he did. And this episode was a little bit different. It was very conversational. Brian was like throwing questions back at us. So I thought it was kind of caught us off guard on a couple of these questions, but it was very back and forth conversational. And we asked some questions that would help our personal portfolios as we're, you know, a few steps behind him. But I think it'll really help people listening to be like, oh, okay, he did this in 6 years. Like, why could I not do this in 6 years?
Yes.
Especially in the position that he came from.
I would say get through the first 10, 15 minutes. Brian is very matter of fact. And we were still feeling each other out for the beginning of it, but it gets super conversational, ping pong back and forth with questions. So stick through the full episode. You'll get a ton of knowledge out of it.
Absolutely. Let's do this thing. Bring in Brian.
This episode is sponsored by REI Call Center. If you're looking to invest in real estate but don't have time to find great deals, we have a solution for you. You're going to follow these steps and hopefully you'll have more deals crawling into your inbox every single day. 1, visit reicallcenter.com. Step 2, hire a professional cold caller. 3, receive lists of motivated sellers. Step 4, vet through and call the quality leads that are dropped into your inbox. Step 5, begin negotiations. And our favorite step, step 6, close more deals.
Let's do it.
Brian, officially welcome to the show. We are thrilled to have you on and share your story with our listeners.
Nice. Well, I'm excited to be on and meet you guys.
Thanks so much. If you could give a little brief background on who you are, where you're from, and then kind of take us into the backstory of how you got into real estate investing.
All right. Well, so I'll start way back, I guess. I was born in March 23rd, 1991. And just turned 31. So I was born in Puerto Rico. For those that don't know, that's a part of the United States, but kinda. So I was born in Puerto Rico, moved to Las Vegas when I was 6 years old. Grew up with a single mom. Around 15 years old, I decided that I wasn't gonna go to school anymore. So I'm a high school dropout. Around 19 years old, I had my first son. So I started off super good, high school dropout, teenage father. Was really hooked on drugs for most of my life. Got sober when I was like 25. And that's when I started real estate and met my wife in the same year. And then since then, I became a realtor, then investor. Since then, fast forward, I've closed over 200 and something real estate transactions as a realtor and investor. I'm building a portfolio of Airbnbs, and then I flip houses full time.
Brian, I'm not going to gloss over this because the fact that you went from, it sounds like a really low point in your life, and not that long ago, like 6 years, right? Like six, 7 years.
To, had a low decade, not yeah, a low point, right? From 15 like, to 25.
But like, if you're at that point, what, something had to have happened. Something had to have changed drastically for you. Was there some sort of moment or something that specifically made you flip on a switch to, well, I want to become a real estate investor and then turn your life around essentially?
I guess what turned it around was a couple things. So one, real estate. I started real estate, but was still kind of dabbling in them. And I noticed that it was affecting my performance. Like, let's just say, for example, I set an appointment with you on Friday and then started messing around through the week. I would completely just blow off appointments because I wasn't in the right state of mind. So I noticed there was a monetary consequence to what I was doing. And then a second part was meeting my wife. My wife is very sober, Mormon, doesn't drink coffee, like pretty straight edge. So it was kind of embarrassing that I always had to be on something to be functioning. So that really like helped me break the habit.
Got it. So she was being the polar opposite of the habits, kind of helped you pull out of that, which is pretty, which is pretty remarkable. So then let's talk about your start in real estate investing. Because I guess you're kind of talking about it cavalierly to get to how you got to this point, but it's like, it's amazing the turnaround. So like what got your start? What gave you the idea to even get into real estate investing? Like, was there somebody, a mentor or somebody who spoke to you in a way that made you want to do it? Like, just walk us through that part of your story.
So, in 2015, I started off as a realtor. So, and then as a realtor, I noticed that I didn't have a lot of free time. I had to work on the weekends, had to work past five. I felt like I didn't have control of my life. And I would talk to a couple real estate investors and I was asking them how much they make per deal. And then the first one told me he made around $60,000 per flip. And, you know, I was making $5,000 per transaction. So I was like, okay, I mean, if I just transition into this, I should make way more and do less work. So that's kind of what triggered me getting into the investment space.
Got it. Cool. So then maybe take us through like your first couple deals of the transition or like how you figured out how to flip. Was there a certain strategy that you used? Did you latch on to these investors specifically? Like maybe talk about your first kind of getting your feet wet in the flipping game.
Yeah. So I guess, so as a realtor, I was really good at listing and selling like distressed properties. So I did a lot of short sales, a lot of probate sales, stuff like that. And I was always working with investors, always selling them the deals because they couldn't be sold to like FHA or conventional buyers. And then that's kind of what kind of sparked my interest because I noticed that the people I was selling to, they were all like pretty wealthy or rich or both. So I was like, okay, like something's going on here. Like these guys keep hitting me up, you know, they're really interested in what I'm doing. And then when I would ask them questions, they wouldn't really like give me any details. So it wasn't until I got a deal and I told one of the investors, I was like, hey, like, you know, I'm not going to keep working with you until you tell me how much you make. And then he told me the 60,000 and I was like, okay, so you're making 60,000 off of every deal that I send you. I've sent you like 20 deals in like the last 6 months. So I started doing the simple math. And then I was like, okay. So I told him on the next one, I want to partner with you. And then he told me no. And then I did the same thing. I was like, hey, if you don't partner with me, I'll find somebody else who will. And then we started partnering on deals. And then after I sold a couple of flips partnering with him, I went off and started flipping on my own.
So how many flips have you done to date?
Like 120 to 130, somewhere around there.
Wow. Let's just dive into one of them. Pick your most lucrative deal and just give us the numbers on it. What you bought it for, what the profit margin was. If you're willing to share numbers, you can go roundabout, but I think it's exciting. Like 60K a clip is pretty high in our estimation. Yeah. But I know there's some people that make a lot more than that. So pick one.
People make more. So let's just say, I'll think of a good one. I almost have it like a conveyor belt system where they're kind of all the same, but there's one that I'm working on right now that I'll make around 150 net, and I didn't like do any work to it. So that would be one of my not highest.
Is that not
nets.
Even like a not even like a flip? Like, did you wholesale it or well, just explain?
So I bought a property like significantly less than market value. And then I just kind of like cleaned it up a little bit. And then I'm in escrow right now to sell it. It's not the highest profit I've ever made, but for sure, it's like one of the easiest.
Got it.
Hopefully
maybe
it ends up closing.
Yeah. Well, talk us through, like, how did you find this property? Like what were the key metrics for you to realize that you were going to be able to make this much? Just give us some detail there.
Yeah. So I do different types of direct to seller marketing, whether it be texting, cold calling, RVM, stuff like that. Ended up getting a really good deal, but then, you know, with appreciation. So, okay. Bought the property. I thought I was going to make, let's just say 60K. That was last year, 2020. Because I have so many projects going on, or 2021, sorry. Because I have so many projects going on, I haven't been able to get to that property yet. And then I was like, you know what? I have too many projects. This one's a heavy rehab. I think I'm just going to sell it as is. When I relooked at the comps, they've gone up like 100,000+. Like when I bought it, I thought it was going to sell for like 360. Now there's comps at like 515. Wow. So yeah, that's why I'm able to sell it at a way higher price without doing much work to it.
So that's got to be the benefit of being a real estate agent as well, right? And just having the ins and outs and resources of the market. Is that kind of how you came about these deals, or are these ones from the wholesalers?
So that one was from direct to seller. So I got it directly from the seller using texting as like a marketing stream.
Yeah, I think, well, I kind of want to dive in a little bit of the texting marketing stream first. Like, can you give us an idea of how this platform or whether it's a platform or an app, or how does this work? Mm-hmm. Because we have brought people on who have talked about cold calling, right? Something like PropStream, where you're like doing the research yourself, some mailing. Texting is like, I'm not even sure if we've talked about that. It's obviously a form of outreach, but like, how does this work? How do you source those leads to know who that you should be reaching out to?
So what I'll do is like, I'll pull a list of, let's just say pre-foreclosures in like a certain area. And then we'll send out like a mass text saying, hey, you know, I'm a local real estate investor interested in buying your property, et cetera, et cetera. And then from there, we'll send out, let's just say 10,000, and we'll get maybe a handful who are interested. And then out of those, then we'll close one or two of those.
It's funny you say that, Brian, because if I go into my, Apple, I don't know if you have an iPhone, but it like separates the known messages from the unknown messages. And if I go into my unknown messages right now, I probably have 9 from people that are texting me trying to buy properties, and they're from random numbers, but the numbers are close enough to the area code that I live in that makes me like, oh, okay. Like, you know, it's not like all the way across the country. Like they have some 856, for example, which is right in Jersey. So I'm like, oh, maybe I know this person, but it gives you kind of like if they say, hey, this is so-and-so, they say my name, it gives me kind of like, I haven't responded to them, but I can see why. Like, I also am not looking to sell. So if like some people have if they have the motivation to sell, it seems like it could be a really good way. Look, it works for you for getting the right properties under contract. So very cool.
Yeah.
So with that, I want to transition into short-term rentals because, mm-hmm. as Corey mentioned, that's where we're looking to kind of move our portfolio a little bit, at least just to see if we can capture a little bit more cash flow per month, right? I know it's mm-hmm. being a host is a lot of work, but if I'm not mistaken, you have about 8 units in the short-term rental space. Can you talk about how you got into that space and why? And then we'll kind of go down that whole rabbit hole.
So I got into that space because I noticed that with long-term rentals, they don't really cash flow as much as people think they do. I think I ended up buying like 10 or so, 10 to 12 long-term rentals. And I was like, dude, I'm not making any money. Like this is BS. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, how many freaking single family houses am I going to have to buy for it to make a dent? You know, probably like a lot. I don't even know. Yeah.
We're learning that too. Kind of.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What's your guys' net per door?
Like 300 per door. Probably
300 per door. Yep. Is that including repairs throughout the year, or correct. That's just stop? That's including the repairs.
Yes, we have got some pretty good deals, and we've done our homework. So, I would say, yeah, like 600 for a duplex, right? So that's for us. We feel like that's
there's
a
some
good
months
deal.
We have $2,500 that comes in because you know in our portfolio because and so they're averaging like 5 or 6, right, or 7, but it depends on the month, right? Like you get big hits or big CapEx expense and you're like, all right, you just lost all your cash flow for the month.
Exactly.
Yeah. But if you look at the year, like I would say we're averaging, we'll come out to that like 300 per door average. So yeah, and you're correct. In order to obtain, especially in today's market and to continue to buy properties at that pace, yeah, you're going to have to buy 20, 30, 40 properties at least, depending upon how much money you spend in order to obtain financial freedom. So that's kind of what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Like it just takes a while.
So $10,000, you guys could see, divide that by 300. That's what you're saying. You get, that's 33 units you would need to buy. And let's just say if it costs you, how much do you think it costs you to buy a property average?
Talking about our, like what our down payment and closing, like to get into it, I would say like $50,000 in this area to get into a property, probably.
$50,000. And then how much you think for rehab normally?
It depends.
10
like,
to 15.
Yeah. I would say like, if we don't typically do like large rehabs, we did one for like $60,000 and we were like, whoa, we're in over our head here. So I would say 20 grand, like
20 grand.
000. Yeah.
So 50 to get in, 20 to rehab. So that's 70, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so 33 times 70K, you're going to need somewhere around $2.3 million in order to make $10,000 passively, average.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of money to put up.
Which is a lot of money. yeah, that's a lot of extra capital you're going to need in order to make $10,000, which by the time you get there, it's probably like $5,000 because everything's getting so expensive. I don't know about where you guys live, but the cost of living in California is increasing like significantly. So that's why I got into Airbnbs, long story short.
No, I love the breakdown because what happened for us, and there's like stages of this wealth building game, right? For us, we're like, we learned about something first. We're like, this is going to take us on the highway where we need to go. And then we come to a crossroad and we're like, whoa, wait a second. Like, I thought we were going this way. Like, okay, no, maybe we want to pivot a little bit here. And that's what happened with the e-commerce is we're like, we're going to use real estate as, and this is, you're talking strictly cash flow, right? Our properties have also appreciated to $300,000 in totality, right? Or maybe more. So it's like that aspect of it, you add that in too. So you have your baseline for your long-term rentals. We'll shift over a little bit into e-commerce. We'll shift into short-term rentals. And then, you know, as you start to stack these different streams of income, then you can really start to build the wealth. The long-term rentals for us is a way to have a stability and a baseline, and we're not banking on the cash flow of those to live off of. So that would be the answer to your question.
Yeah.
Like, do we need 33? We're probably not going to get to 33 because we're probably gonna have other different investments that we go into. And if
you need
get
more,
to 33, depending.
Yeah, we'll need, that was 10,000.
Exactly.
I don't know how much it costs you guys to live, but yeah.
We would say where our goal is to get to $60,000 each, right? But then that's just like to cover baseline, right? Not to live like the life that we really want to live. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and I forget who it was, and but he was like, look, when you get to $20,000 a month in passive income, that's when you really can start to have some fun. Like if it's truly like a level of passivity where you don't have to work 60, 70, 80 hours a week, right? So so there's a lot of ways to get there. And talk to us about your like getting into the short-term rentals and what that brings you and why you decided to kind of dive down that rabbit hole there.
Decided to go down that rabbit hole because I'm pretty good at math, even though I'm a high school dropout. I realized that the numbers just didn't make sense. You know, the financial freedom that we're all chasing with rentals is very hard with long-term rentals. So I bought this property in Joshua Tree, and I actually got hit up by Tony Robinson. He's like the host for the Bigger Pockets podcast or whatever. And he hit me up. He was like, hey, I was going to buy that house, but you got it. I was like, oh yeah, great. And then he started talking to me about short-term rentals. I ended up deciding I was going to use that one as the short-term rental. I started seeing the cash flow from it. So I was like, all right, this makes way more sense than a long-term rental. So I'm transferring my entire rental portfolio into short-term rentals now instead of long-term rentals. I actually hate long-term rentals. I think they're a waste of time, and I think they just don't make any sense. So
all right, let me ask you this then. So like, I'll play devil's advocate for a second. Let's just say,
play devil's advocate.
Yeah. Like, let's just say that the one thing about long-term rentals is there's always a need for them. Right. And I don't know, we just lived through a pandemic, you know, barring a nuclear catastrophe, there's always a need. There's always a need for long-term rentals. There will be tenants for the rest of the times that there are houses. So that's going to be a long time. So that's the stability aspect.
Yeah.
Do you have any worry in the way that you're building your short-term rental portfolio? Although there is a lot of cash flow, do you have any worry that there is any disruption to that market based on the laws changing, based on, I don't know, the hotel business, for example?
Like, long story short, no.
Okay, talk to us about it then. What about that? Because to me, we want to get into this space too, and we're going to. Like, we already decided that we are, but I do have this like hesitation in the back of my head. I'm like, well, we can't afford it to live solely on its own if it's a long-term rental, that property, right?
And
the math doesn't add up. So
exactly.
Where's the information come from that tells you that like, this is here to stay and I'm going to put some of my eggs into this basket?
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think traveling is going to go away?
Absolutely not.
All right. So we're always going to need some place to stay. Unless something happens where traveling stops, then people are always going to need a short-term rental. That's like the easiest answer, I guess.
Sure. I think we were looking at, I forget the gentleman's name. He's coming on our show, Matt Elefante, I believe his name is. And he's going to be on in a couple weeks, but he's really big on TikTok. He's got like 800,000 followers. And he put up this funny video of like him pretending to be like somebody who's coming to stay, in his property, and he was the host, and they were saying that like, oh, like he shows them like throwing dirt on the floor and saying, hey, this place is unlivable. Like, and there's apparently some new law that is coming out and saying that like, if you're you're not a tenant. I forget
it's a term of use in Airbnb. And it's basically like, if you're a guest with them and you find something wrong, that you get a refund, but then also the host has to essentially pay for you to stay somewhere else down the line.
You heard about that? No, never heard of it.
Yeah. Well, apparently
even if it did, it still doesn't matter because an average stay is $300. I average net $4K a month net per property. So if I have a guest that's a fucking idiot and it's going to do something stupid like that, like, oh, I lost $400.
That was my exact argument earlier today.
Yeah, I was just like bouncing ideas off Ryan earlier. I was like, so how does this affect us? He's like, it doesn't. And I was like, okay.
Well, let me ask you guys. Can you have a long-term tenant that fucking destroys your property?
100%.
Yeah. 100%.
Absolutely. We just don't want to pay for someone to go travel to Bali after they already cost us $400 where we have to pay for their trip.
Yeah, but you could have a long-term tenant that causes heavy rehab on your property, smoking, you know, paint, flooring, all that crap. Let's just say it's a $15,000 rehab. That's years of cash flow. If it's a $300 a door that you're working on, that's years of cash flow just down the drain off of one tenant.
Right.
So the return on investment is averaging like 100% what I'm seeing on cash return with an Airbnb, where on long-term you're lucky to get, let's just say $3,000 to $4,000 on a $70,000 investment. That's not, so what is that? Like a 15% cash on cash return.
Here's my question is like, okay, so you have your portfolio. How do you transition that into a short-term rental portfolio and know the numbers are going to work? Are all your rentals currently in a sort of like a touristy area at the moment?
Yeah. So of course. Yeah. So I invest in touristy areas, Airbnb areas.
Okay, cool. So another question for you. Are you self-managing this portfolio of eight or are you pawning this off to someone else?
No, I hired a property manager.
People would argue that, hey, listen, I don't want to take the 25% hit on a property manager for an Airbnb portfolio. Are you paying 25% or are you paying less?
I pay less.
Okay. Like 15, talking 20, like where?
It's less than 15%.
Oh, really? That's what some people pay for their long-term.
And if people were smart, they could fucking hire a full-time assistant for $3,000 a month and just load them up with Airbnbs.
All right. So let's get into like the how you, where you're looking for these properties and how, like how you're finding them. But we want to know about this because selfishly for part of this is our next venture. And like we're bringing on people that are going to help us and help others get into this space if they want to. And to go off what you're saying, the number one reason why we're getting into it too, is because we know we can make $4,000 to $6,000 a month.
Pretty easily
with the right property. And that's like enough to shift our life. Like
Yeah. You need three. I always tell my students, you need 3 to 4 Airbnbs to make $10,000 a month. If you're good, it could be one. But if you're just lazy and you're half-assed in it, it's 3 to 4.
So how do you get good? Because, and I want to do, the reason I'm asking this is the people that we've asked for help and to educate us have all suggested that we self-manage, right? And then I've been going through all of the details and like, I'm like, dude, this is a lot of work. It's a full-time job to self-manage these things.
Yeah, it is a full-time job.
So can you talk to just like how one can set you off and like how one, I guess, would go about hiring a property manager for an Airbnb versus like a long-term rental?
Yeah. So there's like Facebook groups like Airbnb hosts or Airbnb hosts Florida or whatever. Like there's thousands of groups. You could just post on there and say, hey, I'm looking for an Airbnb manager. There's Airbnb management companies that are straight VAs from the Philippines that will like run your whole shit. So it's not super complicated.
But it all the whole thing about Airbnb and short-term rental, right? It revolves around these reviews, right? And so I just think about like, okay, so say there's, you know, Ryan and you have my little like picture up at the top. Is that VA acting as me? And running the show, and like the reviews are based on what like everybody thinks it's Ryan running the show, but it's just the property manager or the VA.
Yeah. And the reviews are on the property. They're not so much on the management. Like I don't really get reviews that are say, hey, Brian did a good job checking us in and checking us out. You know what I mean? People really leave reviews like, hey, the house was beautiful. The beds were comfortable. The aesthetics look nice. You know, this place is near restaurants. You know what I mean?
Are there like, I don't know, do you provide like guest book or a welcome book or something for just like an amenity when people get there just to make it feel?
Okay. I don't, because I'm kind of lazy. So I'm doing this very passively because I run a 7-figure flipping business. So I have that to run and Future Flipper, the coaching program. So I run my Airbnb very passively right now because that doesn't bring in as much income as these other things, but I do know that this one is very important. So I'm in the process of building to 20 Airbnbs. And then once I'm there, then I will go back and start trying to maximize profits and maximize everything in the portfolio.
Okay.
Love it.
So that's awesome, by the way. If you could give us an idea of just so people Because getting to 8 Airbnbs is a great feat, but it's not like undoable for a lot of people. Like you can if you put the work in. So what does 8 properties, if you're willing to share, with hiring out the either the VA or the property manager that you use, what does that bring you monthly? And like approximately how much hours of work does it take you to manage that, manage the manager, so to speak?
Yeah. So I'm projecting by the end of the year, it'll bring in $300,000 net after everything. And it takes me no time because I don't manage the properties. But like little stuff here and there will come up. Well, the guests will just randomly get my number and call me for something, but then I'll like transfer it back to the management to handle.
Okay. So
it's literally like what we did with our long-term portfolio.
Yeah.
And he sold me.
Yeah. It's very,
yeah,
dude,
yeah,
I studied this. This is funny. And I talked to you about this before, but I'll just be as transparent as I can. Yesterday, I spent literally 8 hours, my whole day, YouTube and making a huge outline on like how I'm going to self-manage. I watched every single video just about on Tony's channel. And then it's funny, I kind of saw that you guys were connected. And I watched him on the Joshua Tree and like what to put in your portfolio and your properties and the whole nine. And Corey and I just had the argument, and not really the argument, but like the conversation of our long-term portfolio. And we're like, dude, we're done. Like just push it to someone else. They can run it. They'll hit you up if there's an issue. And then you can spend more time doing what you do best, is finding deals and networking. Mm-hmm. And it's just funny to hear it out loud, but I'm thinking I totally am changing my mind here. And it's like, instead of me spending all these hours just learning how to manage this shit, I'm think we might just have to hire it out. If it's not going to cost 25%, I'll pay 12.
Even if it's 25%, it's more than what you're making on your Airbnbs. So you're getting stuck on a stupid statistic that doesn't make a difference. Take 25% off of 4K is 3K. You're making $300 a door. Who cares if it's 25%? It doesn't make any sense. A lot of people hit me up and they're like, oh, you know, I don't want to pay a wholesaler $20,000. That's ridiculous. I'm like, yeah, but I just made $60,000. Yeah, but I wouldn't pay them 20. It's like, well, you could not pay them 20 and make nothing, right? Or you can not pay 25 and then you could manage it and get another full-time job. So
it's literally, thanks, dude.
We're laughing because I think
it's so obvious.
Without knowing it, you're the person that we needed to talk to today.
We literally were so stressed out for the call, dude. We're like, listen, man, this new rule, if they pour dirt on our floor, I don't know, man. I think should we do this?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, we should do it. But dude, look at all this work it's going to take to self-manage. And within 3 minutes, you convinced us how easy
we are. I am a coach, but yeah, I think
appreciate you, coach.
Yeah. That's like, I've learned that for me personally, there has to be some things that I just non-negotiable, I will not do. And then managing the Airbnbs was one of them where I didn't manage them for one day. I have no idea how to price them. I have no idea how to put an Airbnb listing into Airbnb. I have no idea. Cause I'm just like, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do it. So
I'm not going to compare myself to you because you're on a different level, but like, that's how I feel. Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't want to manage long-term and it's not difficult. So like, I know managing short-term is,
it's way more difficult.
Yeah.
It's way more difficult. And I'll be honest, like if I had to do it myself, there's no way I could do it. It's too much work.
So you're talking about, I just did some math for you. You have 8 properties bringing in net, you said $300,000. So that means that your properties are bringing in roughly $38,000 a pop, you know, depending upon the price range, but that's what they're averaging. And that's money in your pocket, which is amazing because you just told us you did actually no work once the property is bought. So
yeah.
What is a setup?
So I still have to set them up. So that part, the management, my management company doesn't set them up.
What do you mean by setup? Just like decorate
furniture. Yeah. Yeah. Like all that stuff. Yeah.
Before he goes into that, let's talk about the setup, right? How do you know what amenities to put into the property and what people are going to be looking for? Like the right beds, the right mattresses, I guess. And like the aesthetic, do you hire like an interior designer?
I did hire one. So I had my wife do one. I hired an interior designer for one. And then after she did like one or two, I kind of like understood what it needed. So I was just copy pretty much the same look over and over.
So say someone for us, we're looking down in Florida, like that's for us to get down there, right? It's a hike from where we are up in Philly. Oh,
yeah.
So
we're
probably going to have to hire an interior designer. Did you go, I know you said you hired your wife. Did you guys go out and like make a weekend of it and just like buy everything?
Yeah. So I don't want to make it seem like, oh yeah, I bought all these properties and I just didn't do shit, because that's not true. So
all right, well, glad you cleared that up.
I don't want to. I'm just managing right now. I don't do, but to set them up, there was in the beginning a significant amount of work to set them up, for sure. It was a lot of work, but then obviously like the first one's 100 hours, the second one's 80. And then slowly you start like getting systems for setting them up.
Totally. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Can you just talk to the process of handing it off to a VA or your property manager? Like, do you just give them your login for Airbnb and be like, here, go?
Yeah. Yeah. So you can give them a login. And then I think there's like another thing that they do that they could be added onto your account as like a administrator or something like that.
Yes.
So, yeah. So I think they have both. They have my login and they're like an administrator or something like that.
Very cool. All right. So the thing that you can control, let's talk about this, analyzing the Airbnb deals, right? Because I'm going on there and that is probably the most tedious part or the hardest part, I guess, if you're not going to manage. So can you talk about like how these running these numbers is different than a long-term rental and like how you can kind of say like, all right, I can project that I'm going to make this 38K a year in cash flow.
So what I did, like a cheat code to life, I just copied someone else. So I copied Tony Robinson.
Do you have his calculator?
I have his calculator. I have all this stuff, but I saw someone else in a local market that was operating and I'm like, okay, let me see what they're doing. And then just kind of copy them, but it's literally not that complicated. Like, let's just say if I was doing Miami, I mean, I kind of have a pretty good idea of what someone in Miami is going to want. You know, it's not going to be like green floors and, you know, wooden walls. You know, it's going to want some modern stuff, a nice bed. It's not too complicated when it comes to like the setup. So wherever you're looking at, it's just like flipping a house or a rental, long-term rental. You have to look at the comps. So I would go on Airbnb and look at a similar property to yours and look at the ones that are selling more nightly and then the ones that have like high occupancy and just copy them. So I actually don't copy Tony Robinson because Tony does his designs like really well. He does a really good job where mine are more basic, but I just use common sense, like what I think will look decent, because there's actually not that much you have to design.
No, most of these things come, at least in this market, they're come furnished and we can do some tweaks. There's like theming rooms, right? Like, cause it's right by, we're looking sort of by Disney. And so you theme it, there's like Star Wars theme.
Oh, it's Orlando.
It's Orlando. Yeah.
Got it.
And so, but with that, it's actually just running the numbers, right? To see like projecting your cash flow, not so much the aesthetics, but are you just using a straight calculator and just kind of seeing what other people rent theirs for and like get the kind of saying, I can guesstimate this will be what it.
Yeah. So you could use AirDNA. So AirDNA is like a tool that does it for you, but they're usually a little bit lower than what the actual rent will be. And then you could just run comps on Airbnb itself. And like what I like to do is, let's just say, to keep it super simple, if my house is a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house in a certain area, I'll go on to Airbnb and look for a 3-2 in that area and just kind of see how it's doing. And then also I'll say like, okay, this property that I'm comparing it to, can I beat this one, or do I know mine won't do as well? Because I know Tony, like, they do a really, really good job on their comps. Tony's wife is like super into design and all that crap, where I'm not. So I know their Airbnbs outperform mine for sure. I know. I already know. We've gone over the numbers. So you kind of just have to compare it to other active listings.
But is that just like a price point to entry too? Like, what are the average cost of the Airbnbs that you're buying? I mean, maybe are they buying ones that cost more, which is why they're outperforming?
No, it's straight design. Like if you have two Airbnbs that are the same built, same everything, but one's designed better, it will completely outproduce the other one.
Can you give us a specific example? Like, I'm just curious on like, are you buying properties for $500,000 or $600,000? Are you buying them for more?
I try to buy under 400,000.
So you're talking about under 400,000 and the properties are bringing in close to $40,000 in your pocket at the end of the year. So that's insane. But if somebody, you're saying if this is designed better, that number can be $50,000-$60,000 in your pocket.
It could be way more. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
It's pretty cool. It's all design and experience. So if you could set something up that has really nice design and there's some sort of experience, it's going to crush. But like for me, I'm very like, I have no design and I'm not very creative. And I really want to handle this passively where they put more effort into it. Right. So we're just running two different business models.
It makes sense. I mean, you literally just told us you have a seven-figure flipping business. And then this is kind of another side piece that brings in revenue, right? So
yeah.
Once you get to the 20,
it's hard to fathom making $300,000 on the side, but yeah, hey, you're doing it.
So it's a different business. Yeah. I guess it's two different businesses. Yeah.
Right. But I love what you said earlier is like, hey, listen, I'm going to get to 20. And then once I have my baseline, I'm going to just start tweaking everything. And then you can increase profits from there, which I think is brilliant. And what you're doing is you're not spending time doing the BS now where you're just like, hey, I'm finding the deals. I'm getting my baseline and my foundation. And then I'll tweak it along the way and watch it flourish. I mean, at that point, you're just getting more properties under your belt at a cheaper price anyways, because they're going to go up. I mean, technically down the line. So I like your,
Acquisition. So like, I don't want to like I said, make it seem so easy. The acquisition and the setup is work. It's not just like, oh, I bought this house and it's on Airbnb tomorrow. No, obviously you have to look for it. Then you have to buy it. That takes time, right? It's not fucking like no time to buy a house. You have to buy it. Then you have to set it up. And then you have to make sure that everything is there. Cause if people show up and shit's not there, then you do get bad reviews. So that part is time. There's the management part is passive, but you guys have said you bought a property and renovated it. That's not passive. That's work.
We know that's the thing. I'm like, it doesn't feel like work at this point because we've done it before. We're like, oh, you know what I mean? Like it's part of the process, right? Like boom. But the management was where we're like, damn, that's going to be work. That's going to be every day sucking.
It is. And it's very like tedious and it's not fulfilling and it's a lot of babysitting people. Like this lady called me yesterday and she's like, hey, the neighbor's dog is calling me. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll go talk to the neighbor's
dog. Wait, the neighbor's dog is calling me? What?
Or, I'm sorry, not calling. It's Bart.
What kind of dog is this?
Tell Josh what you do. I don't know. Look at the
difference right there. She was tripping. The guest called me and said the neighbor's dog is barking. So I'm like, okay, but with a long-term tenant, I could be like, hey, go screw yourself. But with a guest, I have to be like, okay, let me work on this for you.
And totally. Then, you're hosting them.
Yeah, you're hosting them.
Experience.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that's where there's a difference. And I don't have that personality. That's another reason why I know I needed a host or a manager, because I don't have the personality to like have customer service.
Totally.
It's funny because I can kind of tell that you're very matter of fact. And like, I resonate with that because we've talked to a number of people who invest in short-term rentals, and it is real estate investing, but it really is the hospitality business.
Like, yeah. It's a different business. Yep.
It's like you own a small hotel, like, or one or a couple rooms in a hotel. Right. So it's like having that when you get there, if the Wi-Fi isn't set up or they don't have batteries or the lights are out, like there's these problems. And like, it's not like you're like, oh, submit a maintenance request. Somebody will be with you in 3 days. Like you have to get this fixed. Boom. Like
exactly.
You have to,
that's why the management is important. So like, So to go to that 25% management fee, right? If we take you guys and say, hey, you guys manage this property for a year and let's let the management company manage it for a year, there could be a significant difference in revenue just on management, because you guys are like, fuck, dude, you know, Friday, someone calls you for something stupid. You're like, I'm not dealing with this because sometimes it is so stupid. I had someone call me like, hey, the battery's out on here. And I, like you said, I am a matter of fact person with like, well, go to the store and buy a battery, but I can't say that. The management has to like deal with it and make sure that the guest is happy. Exactly. Yeah. And I don't want to be responsible for those text messages because Airbnb does do a good job of keeping hosts accountable. Everything is on the platform. There is a certain amount of time you have to respond to a guest for things. So you do need someone who's actually going to be willing to do that work.
It's funny you mentioned this, Brian, because I've been there getting and this is one of the reasons why we hired a property manager for our small portfolio that we have. I've been there on Thanksgiving with my family and they're like, the toilet's overflowing. And I'm like, I'm not dealing with this. Like this is so stupid. Like I'm not, but I had to, like, so I was like, okay. I mean, I didn't go over there. I have contractors, but still getting somebody on Thanksgiving to go try to like deal with this is like, I had to make 19 phone calls and like, eventually it worked out, but I paid X amount more than I should have, blah, 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 blah. My whole point is like, Ryan and I were talking before this. So I was like, yeah, I mean, it could be Christmas Eve. And like in Orlando, it's a full year round time people are renting. And you better believe our highest paying person will probably be there on Christmas Eve. Right? So in order for them to not write a shit Yelp review, it's not Yelp, but like how easy is it for somebody to write on Yelp, which is the same thing, essentially. You have to be extremely hospitable. So like, it's funny that we're interviewing at this time. Cause like I am sold on hiring a property manager at the very least a VA to have it, you know,
I would personally, like, I wouldn't even hire a blank like VA and train him. I would try to hire a VA that like does it already. So that way you're not like training them. And because like me and my wife just went to the Future Flipper event in Vegas. Right. And now I could tell who's a VA and who's an American and all that stuff. Like I could just tell from experience, like some VAs, they're just like, they just kind of suck. And then it tempts me to want to write a bad review, but I don't do it. But you have to just make sure you hire a good VA.
Got it. What you're saying when you're personally, you were the guest in the
area. Yeah, I was personally a guest. And then I reached out because the Wi-Fi was not working. And then I could just tell she couldn't understand what I was like really saying. And then the way she was like writing to us, like I said, I could tell because I'm a host and I'm more business savvy, where she said something like, hey, what time are you checking out? Where like that could be interpreted as kind of rude. You know what I mean? Because this is like, if you're staying at a hotel and I say, hey, what time are you checking out? You're like, what time is checkout? 11? Well, that's what I'm checking out. Like,
why are you trying to get me out of here?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So like, I could tell who is like self-managing and really cares and who has a VA that's kind of like following a script.
Yeah. We may just go the property management route that for someone that manages Airbnbs, right? And that's what they do. And I guess it's going to come down to interviewing these people, right? So I guess we'll start with the Facebook group that you mentioned, and there's probably some out there. I think our realtor has people too, but
yeah, I would go on like Orlando Airbnb host or Orlando Airbnbs. And if you put on there, you're looking for a host, you're going to get a whole bunch of people that hit you up. There's gonna be a lot of people.
Okay.
You have to interview them obviously though.
Yeah. Love it.
Absolutely. And they help, I assume like they help build your team, right? I guess if they're just host, I don't know if they're like a property manager, will they have the handyman?
Have it. Yeah. Okay. If they're a legitimate. Yeah. Cause I would be like, hey, same thing when you're hiring a contractor, I'll say, hey, show me a listing that you manage. Okay. Look at it. Like who's your cleaner? Who's your handyman? Why should I hire you?
Yep.
You know, same concept.
Yeah, I like it. I'm trying to think if we can get this thing down from 25%, it'd be great. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It's still $3,000, right?
You could negotiate them down. But let's just say in Joshua Tree, there's Desert Estates Management. They're like the most popular, most well-known. Like if you go to them, you're paying 25%. Like they're, you know what I mean?
Commercialized.
Like,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then there's like the littler mom and pop entrepreneurs. And then there's the VAs. So there's all types of different systems for it.
Cool. Yeah. Very cool, man. So before we get to the second to last segment of our show, I want to talk to you about your future goals with your business, because we joke back and forth about you being matter of fact, but it's like, it comes from a level of confidence of how long you've, maybe not how long, you haven't been doing it that long, but how quickly mm-hmm. you've been able to scale your flipping business and then mm-hmm. your Airbnb business. And once you start to obtain some wealth, it does become easier, right?
Yeah,
so like, what are your future goals with, you mentioned the Airbnb 20 units. Mm-hmm. What are your future goals with your flipping business? And like, mm-hmm. where do you see that going in the next, I don't know, 3 to 5 years?
Yeah. So the thing with Airbnb is also to keep talking about it is like, I don't need 100. So for me right now, 20, once I get there, I'll be pretty happy. That should generate minimum around $500,000 net a year, right? $500,000 a year net. So I want to get there. And then my flipping business, I'm just using to fund those projects and just save some money. But I don't know if I want to keep flipping for another 5 years or so. So my main goal is to get to those 20 and then I'm going to reevaluate. But right now I have so much going on that I don't like it. I'm only doing it temporarily until I could get to that passive income goal and then reevaluate what I want my business and like life to look like.
You sound like you're several steps ahead of where we are, like in terms of our mindset and what we feel like we're, because we have full-time jobs too. So like doing this on the side, trying to build a couple businesses, like we're like, how can we get to this level of passivity that allows us to have freer thoughts and then do really what we want to do. So it sounds like you're using flipping as a means to an end, really. Like,
yeah, 100%. You're
generating you as much revenue as you possibly can for the time being. And I mean, if you've bought 8 in the time frame that you have, 20 is a couple of years away at this point. I mean, there's no way, there's no reason.
Yeah, I'm trying to do it by the end of this year and just acquire them. And then it takes time for setup. But my goal is to acquire all of them this year, have the 20, and then get them all set up. And then once they're all set up, then figure out what I want to do with flipping. But like flipping at this level is a lot of work. So yeah.
It is a full-time job. No, I think you said it perfectly. And it's just, you're using your profits to fuel your Airbnb business or your short-term rental business, which is great. And then is your whole long-term portfolio converted over? Is that what you said?
No, I'm in the middle of, so I have to finish my taxes this year. Because I'm going to get those write-offs. And my CPA said, if I sell them before I file my taxes, I can't get the write-off or whatever. So I have to finish my taxes. Once those are done, I'm going to start selling my long-term rentals and doing a 1031 exchange and then just moving them all to short-term rentals. Very cool.
Are these all, and I don't think we asked this earlier, I know you had a couple in Joshua Tree, but are you all over the country or is it all?
No. So Joshua Tree and then like the mountains in, California, like Big Bear and Lake Arrowhead.
Oh, cool. Okay. Very cool.
Yeah. Awesome. But I'm going to diversify and Orlando's, I feel like Orlando, that's actually a good idea. I never thought about that, but, yeah, I'm going to try to diversify a little bit once, we'll see what happens, but I'm not going to buy them all in Joshua Tree.
Makes sense. I think that diversification is good, especially in the short-term space. Cause like, I don't know. We're pretty conservative in our risk tolerance. So like if something happens to a specific area for whatever reason, the laws change based on political, who knows, having them in multiple areas seems like a good idea. We think Orlando, because it's like, we want to one be a full-time full year, have it be rented the full year, obviously not 100% occupancy, but obviously it'll be less in August than it is in February, but like people are going to Disney the entire year.
All year. Yeah. So that is one thing I don't like about Joshua Tree, that it is a little bit of like, it's not $3,000 every single month. Like some month there's 8, some months there's 1, some month there's 2. It's because like in the summer it gets very hot and that's like the slow season, but then fall, spring, winter, there's more bookings, but the middle of summer when it's like 125 degrees, that's when it's like the slowest.
That makes sense.
Cool. So second to last segment of our show, Core 4, we're asking you some questions to kind of get to know you a little bit more personally, mm-hmm. some kind of what makes you tick here. So first question is, do you have a favorite like business or investing book that you maybe would recommend to people either just getting started or that inspired you?
Um, uh, I would have to look at my books, but the first book that I ever read that was like that really inspired me was Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Napoleon Hill.
Yeah. But as far as like investing books, none that I really, I'm not a big reader. I listen to books, but let me look at my list really.
It doesn't have to be a book. It could be like a podcast. It could be just some sort of resource that other people could go and.
So I guess the book Flip Your Future by Ryan Pineda, that was like the book that got me into flipping houses.
Okay.
Really cool.
Flip Your Future.
Yeah, Ryan's killing it. Second question for you. And this, it differs from person to person, depending on how much this actually would impact your portfolio. But if you had an additional 50K handed to you today, you could use it any way you want. How would you spend it, invest it, and why?
An extra 50K. So I guess 50K for me, I would probably just try to buy another Airbnb or reinvest it into my flips.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Fair enough. So what's, Brian, what's the biggest mistake that you've made in your investing journey and how have you learned from it?
So I've made so many mistakes. So I think there's so many different mistakes. I could tell you like specific investment deals that went south or just like overall mindset.
Well, whatever affected you the most to that you feels like is a good story.
I'll give you two stories. So one of them, which kind of goes back to why I currently don't do e-com or any of these other things, where I thought I had a good idea that I was going to start flipping houses in like a cheap market. And I was like, hey, Georgia, I don't know shit about Georgia, but that's a cheap market, right? I could buy a house for 70K. That sounds like a good idea, right? I'm in Cali, they're expensive. I'll flip in Georgia. Bought a flip in Georgia, was trying to flip it 100% virtually without knowing anyone there. I was just trying to put everything together. Got involved with the wrong contractor. He ended up kind of extorting me for money for like 6 months. Yeah, it was just a complete shit show. He screwed me over. I overpaid. He put a 15K lien on the property. I had to pay him for that. He was smoking in the house. It was like a whole shit show. And I lost probably like 15K. But the money wasn't the problem. The money was that this was like 6 to 8 months of just like drama. Like the police, an attorney, like COVID first hit when this was going on. So it was just like such a time suck that I was like, damn, like it just really messed me up. So that was one of the worst investment deals that I did. And what I've learned is like, just stay to my lane and don't try to just be all over the place. That's why I'm so adamant about just the 20 Airbnbs and the flipping the houses, because every time I'm like, oh, I could do this and make money without having to work, even though I don't understand it, I'm going to do it anyways. You know what I mean? Like now I just try to keep everything so simple where if it's not in the Airbnb or in the flipping, I'm not doing it.
That's first of all, I just want to commend you for that, because we have had mental battles in our own heads about like, well, is this the right thing to do? And like, the only way to know is to try and to fail. And
we're not afraid
to fail. So that's the number one thing I'll say is we're not afraid to screw up. And the money that we've spent in other areas and other investments, if we lose it all, that would suck, but we're not going to go hungry, right? Like this is part of the game of us trying to figure out how we can get to where we want to get to. So I totally, I agree with exactly what you're saying. I think that for us, it's like, we just got to figure out on our own if we're making the right decisions or not. And then you pivot from there. So
exactly. Yeah. And I made those mistakes. So yeah. I wouldn't have this wisdom if I didn't go through it. So, and I always tell people, like someone says, hey, like, should I invest in mail? It's like, dude, you should, because you should invest in mail. See if it works. If it doesn't, don't do it. If it does, great. Like, but now where I'm at now, I just know, like, I don't want to do anything else. I just want to get to my little goal. Once I'm there, then reevaluate.
Yep. You got your wheelhouse. I think it takes a while for people to find theirs, right? And like what they like and what produces the most cash for them. So love that. All right. Last question on the core four is, what do you want your legacy to be? So what gets you out of bed every morning? Why are you doing this whole thing? Mm-hmm. What's your why?
So right now, my legacy, I don't want to be known as like a house flipper or like an Airbnb host. So like, even though it sounds great, like I really don't care about it. I want to make sure that my kids are not just like, oh, they're took care of financially. Like, I want to make sure that I could take care of them. I don't know if, how to say it, like relationship wise. Let's just say, for example, this is very personal, but one of my sons is very antisocial, right? And who knows, he might grow out of it. I don't know. But I want to be able to make sure that if he doesn't like to go to school, he could work with me. Or, you know what I mean? I just want to be able to make sure that he's okay. And all my kids like that. That's what I really care about. The Airbnbs, the flipping, the biggest wholesaler, the biggest, I don't care. I don't really care. I don't care about social media. I only do social media just to feed my business. But once I get to that 20, that's what I'm saying. I'm going to really reevaluate my life to see like, okay, do I want to work 2 days a week? Do I want to move to Puerto Rico for 60 days and kind of just get out of the whole thing and kind of see what my life will be like then, right? Because I think like making I'm a millionaire. I still have to work. I still have a lot of shit to do. I still have a lot of responsibilities. So I'm not wealthy by any means. So I want to get there where I think once I get those Airbnbs, 500K, that's way more than enough to cover all my expenses and everything. Once I get there, I'm going to reevaluate, see if I want to move, see what I want to do. So I don't know. I don't even
the time, location, and financial freedom, dude.
That's an amazing answer.
I love it.
I want to point out something here that I'm sure that you has probably crossed your mind before, but you know, I don't listen to a lot of Gary V, but one of the things you said, he does come across like my timeline and stuff. One of the things you said reminded me of something he said, or not what he said, but something that about your life. It's like you kind of screwed some things up for, you said 10 years. So for the 15 to 25, like people are so caught up in instant gratification and like being 21 and being a millionaire and driving a Bugatti and like, and like having this like instantaneous, like amazing life. And it's like you, 25 is really young too, but like you essentially started over at that age where everyone's like, I got to get it now. And then by 31, you're at the position that you are in 6 years of obviously hard work and dedication. So it's like, if you can time block, if you can put your head down 5 or 6 years, I don't care if you're 25 starting out, you're 37 starting out, or you're 54 starting out. Like it's possible. And I just think it's really, it's a commendable feat. So obviously you said it like, oh, I'm a millionaire, but like there's a lot of people who aren't. So it's very, very cool.
It is. But you know, the random part is like, so for Joshua Tree, right? This is a Joshua Tree. So a couple years ago, I was flipping houses over there for 50K. I used to buy houses, fix them up, sell them for like 75K. Those houses now are worth 300, 350K. If I would have known what I've known now,
I would
be fucking set, dude. I would be way more than set. I was flipping these stupid houses for so cheap. And now you cannot buy anything in Joshua Tree for like less than 300K. Nothing. And I was buying them for 50. I would sometimes be like, oh, this is too expensive. It's 75K is too expensive. You know, so I think that with that being said, like there is something that I find so important is not just knowing, but actually executing. So you have this idea of Airbnb. That's great. But how long is it going to take for you to actually execute to the point where you own it and it's up and running? Right.
Yeah.
That's super important.
Yep. Well, how do you have time for coaching, by the way? Like, I don't
understand. So my flipping company, I have employees and, you know, people that work with me. So I'm not running the whole shit myself.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you coach an Airbnb?
Yeah. Yeah. We coach wholesaling, flipping, Airbnb.
Not we, do you?
Yeah. There's me and other coaches. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Interesting. Yeah.
Might have a couple clients going your way.
Yeah. You guys should, be a part of it. I feel like you guys should, it depends on what your goals are, I guess. Like if you want to flip or wholesale or what your goals are.
Yeah. Interesting.
We need some cash. That's what we'd want. That's what we want. We want, I don't know. It's hard to say, but we're trying to make it make us just as you are as much cash with as little as time as possible. Right. That's, yeah. That's the goal, right? So you can get more of that time back.
Sustainability attached to it, but yeah, like,
yeah,
but that's exactly right. Yeah. Like how can we build this to get our time back? And like, I coach high school basketball, so I love coaching and I could see myself doing that. Like it's a mentorship and coaching is an extreme passion of mine. I'd like to be able to do that, coach full time eventually. So I'm interested in that sphere.
I'm just a great hype man, so I'll be there. Look pretty, I can make it run. We built this whole thing, right? Like there's the whole Instagram and brand and all that stuff. And it's like, I go back to the purpose talk again, right? Like this, that gives us fulfillment and like gets us excited. It's like, how can we take this even further? Right. And I think by having more time to dive into it all, and you can monetize that as well, but also it's inspiring and coaching and teaching and helping others, educating them to reach financial freedom. And if you can get a lot more people there, like that's for me, that would feel amazing. So
that's why I want to do the whole, like get to that point and then I kind of want to stop working for a little bit, or like I mentioned, take that break, because I don't know what I like to do. Cause I've been fucking working hard for like six, seven years, like straight. So like you talked about coaching basketball, like one of my sons is in basketball. Like to me, that is very fulfilling, sitting there and like, you know, go down the court with your left hand. All right. Go down the court with your right hand, even though it's not super sustainable. It's something that like is fulfilling.
And if you can build a life for yourself where all your money is working for you, then you can do that if you want.
Technically, you'll be getting paid a shitload of money to go coach high school basketball. Exactly. You know what I mean? Like that's what it's all about. And it's like, if you can support your family and support your hobbies and your passions, right? You can't lose that. I think a lot of people, because they're sucked into their 9 to 5 every day, they lose a little piece of themselves. And they're like, shit, I don't even know what I like. Like what makes me happy? Like, I don't know. Like I asked someone the other day, I'm like, what's on your bucket list, dude? You're like 60. Like, is there anything you want to do? And he's like, I just like going to work. Like, I like it. Like, this is my thing. He has his own business. I'm like, okay, cool. But I got like 90 things I want to do. And I like my work too. So I don't know. It's interesting. Everyone is different. That's what makes them so unique. And you can't, I think that would make coaching even more fun, right? You get to learn everybody's story.
I love it.
Well, with that, we've reached the last drop. So last drop is the last segment of the show. Final question for you. Knowing what you know now, what advice would you go back and give younger Brian if you could go back in time, maybe young, I don't know, age 20-ish?
Mm-hmm. So I would give myself the advice, stop doing drugs, stop drinking alcohol immediately, and get into real estate and go work for someone that's successful for free. And don't go sleeping around and being an idiot. So all those tips
to the point.
Yeah.
No, that's
it's honest.
It's honest and it's good advice, because I mean
that'll hit someone in the feels in the call.
Exactly. Sure. I think
in real life there's people out there messing up. You know what I mean? There's people out there playing around when they should tighten up.
Yeah, man. Well, look, this has been an amazing episode. Eye-opening for us, like personally. I don't know if you could tell or not, but we really want to thank you for coming on. If people want to get in touch with you, they want to learn more about you, maybe network, maybe join your coaching program. Like, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
So I mostly check my Instagram DM. So it's the Brian Davila. If they want to know more about the coaching, they go to futureflipper.com and then book an appointment with one of our reps.
Love it.
Cool. All right, man. It was a pleasure getting to know you. Thanks so much for coming on the show and dropping some knowledge on us.
All right. Thank you for having me on, guys.
Thanks for tuning in this week. If you enjoyed the show and like what you heard, please subscribe, share it with friends, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. The more ratings we get, the more eyes we'll get on our show. And in turn, we'll be able to provide you all with high quality guests. It's simple. Open your podcast app, type in our podcast name, The Weekly Juice, click on reviews, and let us know what you think. Thanks so much and see you next week.